This is the Sean Hannity Show podcast.
All right. Thanks, Scott Shannon. Welcome aboard. Glad you are with us. Toll free. It's 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of the program, if you haven't joined the Let Not Your Heart Be Troubled Twitter Army Brigade, it's at Sean Hannity. And I got a chance this weekend to catch up with a lot of my Twitter friends, and I'm glad I did. And we're giving away these Let Not Your Heart Be Troubled at Sean Hannity Twitter Army T-shirts. I'm just giving them out randomly and whenever I feel like it. I know that's not fair to everybody, but I'm trying to give out as many as I can. And I will be doing it for the next couple of weeks. Anyway, we have some developments in the case of George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, the tragic shooting in Florida. It's license to kill is how liberals try and portray the stand your ground law. Now, we found out last weekend that, you know, a lot of liberals, or last week, that a lot of liberals, including Frederica Wilson and others that have been so critical of the Stand Your Ground law, in fact, in the past, have themselves voted for these very laws. So there seems to be a great amount of hypocrisy on the left on the issue. But the question is, you know, are they necessary? Can they save lives? To what extent do you have the right to defend yourselves? Is this even a law that's applicable in this case? And George Zimmerman was released on a bond this morning, $150,000 bond, and Twitter is aflutter with death threats against him. Just like the new Black Panther Party and their bounty, nobody's ever been arrested up to this point, as they've been calling for race wars and blood in the streets, etc. Joining us now, Mark Levin. He's a former employee of the House Judiciary Committee. And John Lott is the former chief economist at the United States Sentencing Commission. And he also wrote the book many years ago, More Guns, Less Crime. Welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you, Sean.
Great to talk to you again, Sean.
You know, when you wrote the book, More Guns, Less Crime, I remember interviewing you many times around that time, John, and you were criticized. But the way you came to that conclusion is you actually analyzed the data.
That's right. I mean, I'm sure I was affected by as much as anybody else by the media accounts. I mean, we constantly hear about bad things that happen with guns. Very rarely hear about people using guns to protect themselves or others. And I think it has a big impact on people's perceptions. And ultimately, I think we all care about the same bottom line, what saves lives, what costs lives. And you have to look at the data to see that.
Well, I mean, you know, the data shows that, Mark. Look, I don't know to what extent Stand Your Ground is actually even going to be used as a defense in the case of Trayvon Martin. We don't know all the facts in the case. One side is claiming that Trayvon confronted and punched and beat George Zimmerman. The other side is saying that George Zimmerman was the aggressor. I assume that all of this is going to come out in trial. And unlike the rest of the media, I'm not going to rush to judgment here. But it does raise a lot of questions about the right of people to defend themselves, the right of people to be armed. Do you feel that people, do you feel that people have a right to have a gun that they should be able to carry? Do you support carry laws? Do you support the right of people to have a gun in their home?
Well, totally apart from this law for a minute, I do support the right of people to have guns for self-defense as long as they have not committed a violent felony, they haven't committed domestic violence in the home, they're not insane. I mean, one of the problems with the nation's guns laws is it allows people who are certifiably insane to go to a gun show, pick up a weapon, even if they have a long string of violent felonies behind them. And the NRA supports these gun show loopholes, which I think is disgusting. But if you're not insane and you're not a violent felon and you're not, you know, some child, I certainly think you should have the right to own a gun and defend yourself. But what these
and that
laws,
means the right to carry?
Well, you say the right to carry. You mean the right to carry outside your home?
A carry permit, yes.
Well, you know, again, the question is, if you're not a violent felon, I think that business owners have an absolute right to say, no, you can't bring this in our
bar. I didn't ask about business. What about people that want to do it for self-defense reasons in case, you know, let's say if they live in a high crime area or they just want to be safe in case, God forbid, something ever happens?
If someone is not a violent felon and has not,
Support right
insane,
to carry.
You know, they have a reason to have a gun, then that makes sense.
Well, stop. You keep putting these caveats.
That's right.
As long as they're not insane.
That's right.
If they have a reason, well, do they not have a right to carry the gun, whether, you know, there's a reason or not?
Well, if you're carrying a gun without a reason, I have to ask why you're doing it.
Well, self-defense purposes.
Well, again, I think it's okay to have a gun for self-defense. But
okay,
the
so there's the reason. So anybody can say that, you know, if they have, God forbid anything ever happened where they were, they'd want to defend themselves.
Look, here's the problem with these laws. I mean, yeah, people have a right to self-defense.
You support the right of anybody that does not have a history of a violent criminal record and mental illness to carry a weapon.
Right.
Okay. No caveats from there.
Well, we can just...
Well, again, business owners can prevent people from coming in their establishments. I mean, you could say, I have a bar, and I don't want you to come in my bar with a gun. And business owners should be able to protect their establishment if they have a history of gunfights in their bar, or even if they just
A lot of states actually have restrictions on certain areas, like sporting arenas, public schools,
right.
and bars, where
right.
there's alcohol
and I think that's
served.
Perfectly fine. Do you agree, Sean?
It depends what they are. Go ahead, John.
Well... I mean, one can go and talk about specifics of the laws. It sounds like Mark wants to question the existing laws, but you can look at Florida, for example. Florida's given out concealed carry permits from October 1st, 1987 through now. They've given permits to well over 2 million people. The average person's had permits for over 13 years. And yet there's only been 168 people that have had any type of firearms-related violation causing them to have their permits revoked. That's less than 1/100 of 1 percentage point. And that's true across the state. You find, you know, the actual laws as they are in the books, rather than worrying about the caveats, just saying how do they actually work in practice. And you find people lose their permits for any reasons at hundreds or thousands of 1 percentage point. These people are extremely careful. They have a lot to lose if they behave improperly. And, you know, worrying about the possibility that bad people might go and get these concealed handgun permits, they don't bother doing it. You know, they don't go through the process to go through the background checks and other things to do it. That's the reason why. I mean, it's hard to find any other group in the population that's as incredibly law-abiding as concealed handgun permits are.
Well, has George Zimmerman has had his revoked? I don't think he has. I mean, sometimes people commit crimes and they don't lose their weapon.
He hasn't been convicted of a crime.
Well,
he's now been charged with it.
If you shoot somebody dead... All right, and you've been arrested, and you're on trial.
Well, he was just
hang
on a second. I would assume at this point it probably has been since he has been charged. But up to that point, when he wasn't charged, he didn't have a reason to have it taken away.
Arrested, his permit will be suspended.
Okay,
and if he gets convicted, it'll be revoked.
Okay, well that's the way it should be.
All right,
let's talk about the stand your ground laws.
Well, what about stand your ground?
Okay, the problem with stand your ground laws is it encourages people to bring guns to a fist fight. Right? It's people get in fist fights all the time. People get angry with each other. If they're both armed, one of them's going to end up dead, and the other one's going to end up saying it was self-defense, no matter who threw the first punch. What these laws do is they encourage people to ratchet up the violence.
No.
It's really that simple. Because, look, in Florida, we know that these killings, supposedly in self-defense, have tripled since the law's been passed. And you can't say that's just an accident.
Yeah. You know, people have to understand the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post have done these, I think, pretty irresponsible stories on how much justifiable homicides have gone up. What they don't realize is that who reports this data has changed over time. Both the jurisdictions within states, more places have reported it, and more states have reported it. And a lot of that increase is just simply more places are being counted now than before. And the other problem that you have is that what's counted as a justifiable homicide has changed over time also. That, you know, a shooting that would have taken place 5 or 10 years ago that wouldn't have been counted as a justifiable homicide is now doing it. These laws didn't get changed in a vacuum in Florida. There are lots of problems that were occurring because the previous law was that a person had to retreat as far as possible before defending themselves. And prosecutors, in many cases, could come up with different things, saying, well, I thought the person could have retreated even further. And the third edition of More Guns, Less Crime gives a number of these types of cases. A case where a 67-year-old man was knocked down by a robber, tried to run away, got knocked down a second time, got up, tried to run away, got knocked down a third time. In that case, he pulled out his permanent concealed handgun and he fatally shot the robber. The prosecutor would go and argue, I think he could have tried even more. He didn't retreat as far as possible.
And was he convicted? I doubt he was.
He was.
He was convicted.
Sentenced to prison. But the thing is, even if you're not convicted, putting somebody through the ringer of having to go through the legal process and bring up hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal bills, you know, you have to ask yourself, were there problems with these other laws that were there? And you know, a lot of the, in this case, in the Zimmerman case, the stand your ground law is completely irrelevant. I mean, either story that you believe, if Zimmerman was the first one to throw the punch, it's not appropriate. If Trayvon Martin was beating him and he was on the his back was on the ground, there was no place for him to retreat in any case. And so the law is just irrelevant. The amazing thing is how a law that's not even applicable to this situation has somehow been made the center of attention.
Here's the thing. If you have a reasonable fear of being attacked, if you have a reasonable fear that you're being threatened, if you are in a neighborhood where you don't really know all the ways, maybe, I don't know, your dad lives there, but you can't find the right apartment home, and this guy is chasing you and running after you, and you run and he's running after you, it seems to me that if anyone had the right to stand their ground, it was Trayvon Martin.
But we don't know what happened. There's a minute gap, and you're talking about the tape, and when the dispatcher said, "We don't need you to do that."
Right, but we know he was running at one point.
But he's claiming through his father that, and I interviewed the father, he's claiming that he did stop and that he was walking back to the car and that he was confronted by Trayvon and that Trayvon started a fight and punched him in the face. I don't know this to be established. I'm telling you what both sides are. So if he's walking back to his car and Trayvon confronts him, if that happened, if that scenario did unfold, and Trayvon broke his nose and was on top of him beating him, at that point, Trayvon wouldn't be a case for him either.
I don't know that it wouldn't be, Sean. I mean, here it is. You have a guy where he has a legal right to be, Trayvon Martin, and this stranger starts chasing him, and Trayvon runs, and he chases after him.
I understand, but
understand your ground laws, but Trayvon would have a right to shoot.
But he's saying that he stopped chasing him, was heading back to the car, didn't know where Trayvon was. I'm only giving you what their side is.
Sean, that's my point. I'm not talking about the specific facts.
How is this problematic for the law? I don't see that.
It's problematic for the law because what it says is, what if someone is chasing someone else, right? And then the person who's being chased says, well, I have a reasonable fear, so I have a right to go back and hit the person chasing me.
Well, we know because we know what George Zimmerman's story is. All right. Now, unfortunately, we'll never get Trayvon Martin's side of this story. So it's something that prosecutors and defense attorneys are going to try and have to piece together. But George Zimmerman's story is he was walking back to the car that out of nowhere, Trayvon confronted him. And that Trayvon broke his nose and was on top of him, beating him and pummeling his head into the cement. His injuries seem consistent with the story. We have two eyewitnesses that saw Trayvon on top of George Zimmerman. So I don't think this is applicable
here. I want to get away from the facts of this case to just talk about the law.
Give a little bit of perspective on this with regard to the law. We have 41 states that have either stand your ground or castle doctrine laws. They're very similar to each other. And when you're talking about the fact that there are about 2 million defensive gun uses that occur each year, you know, first of all, the number of justifiable homicides, you know, that we're talking about is incredibly small percentage on these. And then to go and say over these years, if you read all the media stories that have questioned these laws, there's literally just a few cases over a decade or so that they point to which are debatable. And, you know,
imagine a case where you have two people, they each have concealed weapons permits laws, and both of them feel threatened. They're both in the dark. It's in the city. They don't know where they are. They both feel threatened. They both bump into each other. They both have a reasonable fear of being shot, and they end up shooting each other. You go back to the Wild West.
No, Mark.
And I remind you,
stop for a second. You're creating a scenario. Now, this is where John's level of expertise comes in, because you've studied the reality of what has happened in terms of gun violence in the country. What did the statistics show?
That's exactly right. We don't need to go and just hypothetically worry about something that might go wrong. Let's look at the data. I mean, we have a huge amount of data on these types of cases.
And they have tripled.
Now, stop. Let him finish his thought.
First of all, you shouldn't keep repeating that. I already explained to you that simply more jurisdictions are reporting the laws, the cases right now, and that's responsible for a huge portion of the increase that's there. Okay? So that's, you know, you've already been told that that's wrong. If you want to respond to why I'm saying that that's wrong, then that's fine. But, you know, with regard to these cases, I don't know of any case such as what you're talking about. You know, we have, you know, if somebody fires their gun improperly, they're going to be listed in one of these state reports, you know, for each state that has concealed carry. And he's going to have his permit either suspended or revoked. And there's a record of that. And I'm saying, in the third edition, More Guns, Less Crime, I go through the data for 25 different states over many years. And what you find is consistently the rate of any problems with these types of permit holders is hundreds or thousands of one percentage point. I mean, so you can go and say, well, what happens if something happens? But the question is, those types of events are, one, the type you just mentioned, I've never seen happen. And secondly, any of these problems are just so incredibly rare. You know, you have to ask yourself, you know, what are the costs and what are the benefits for these things?
All right, we got a break, John. I don't mean to cut you short here, but I think you made your point, Mark Levine. We're just out of time, but thank you both for being here.
Hannity Headlines, a bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you everywhere you go. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
All right, we're going to come back. We'll get to your phone calls. By the way, it's been less than 24 hours since George Zimmerman was released on bail, and you are seeing a deluge of death threats against him and his family. I saw Michelle Malkin had this on. She picked up a lot of the Twitter quotes that were out there. Kerry Pickett has picked up on some of this. One, I told my dad, if what happened to Trayvon Martin happened to my brother, I wouldn't try and kill Zimmerman. I'd go after his family. I hope somebody kills Zimmerman's whole family and his beep, beep lawyer. And it goes on from there. I mean, where is Eric Holder? You got people threatening race riots and burning down Florida and bounties, and not a peep, not a word out of the Attorney General. All right, 800-941-SHAWN is our number. We'll continue.
We know you never want to miss the Sean Hannity Show. And now you never have to. Just sign up for Hannity Headlines. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you on your laptop, your mobile phone, everywhere you go. Even to your liberal in-law's place in Vermont.
So, yeah.
And after a few hours of that, you'll be glad you brought Sean along. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
Yes, the Let Not Your Heart Be Troubled Twitter Army. Giving away free Let Not Your Heart Be Troubled at Sean Hannity Army t-shirts. It's really cool, by the way. You can see them on there at Sean Hannity when you join Twitter. And I'm just giving them out randomly, and we're just having fun. All my Twitter friends out there. All right, let's get to our busy telephones as we say hi to Jason. He is in Atlanta, News Talk, WSB, AM, and FM. What's up, Jason? How are you, sir?
Good, Sean. How are you doing today?
I'm good, my friend. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Sean. I've been a listener for a long time, and Sean, after hearing your talk on Friday, felt compelled to call in finally.
Yes, sir.
I think you're dead wrong on the energy policy and kind of talking with the former Shell CEO about all the drilling, the tapping, the selling of the oil is dangerous and depletes our resources.
Well, as he said, we have unlimited resources. Look, and by unlimited, what he's saying is it will buy us well over 100 years. Do you think in 100 years from now, think of all the technology that was developed in the last 100 years. It's almost silly to think that we shut down a patent office at the time. I guess it was in the 1920s, or suggested we shut it down because everything that could be created has been created. I don't think there's any limitations on man's ability to create.
Perhaps, but there's certainly some limitations on the finite oil reserves that are in the United States.
All right, but what he's saying is this, that we have more resources here at home when you look at coal, oil, and natural gas, than we are the oil capital. We are the energy capital of the entire world, and we have now allowed ourselves to become dependent on foreign sources of energy when we have the ability to extract this energy here at home, by the way, while simultaneously developing the green energy that liberals like you would love.
Oh, well, I'm trying not to be offended with that last part, Sean. But
why do you liberals hate being called liberals? Why do you hate being identified for what you are? You can call me a conservative. I don't look at it as a pejorative.
Well, you know what, Sean? I would certainly consider myself a conservative, but I'm also a data-driven realist and an engineer who knows and actually serves the oil marketplace. With that data, you can see that as the price of the oil goes up, the price of the wells being drilled goes up. And the drilling continues, the prices of oil continue to go up. Resources are being depleted, not for driving down the price of oil, but just to sell it at the current market prices as soon as it gets over $100.
Let me help you out here. I had a double major in college, and it was economics and poli sci. And if you go to economics 101, when you learn about supply and demand and they crisscross, and when supply and demand crisscrosses, what does that equal?
The price.
Okay, so if we have an artificially low supply because environmentalists control the Democrats in the White House and we don't drill for the massive resources that everybody acknowledges exist between ANWR, the 48 states off the east and west coast in the Gulf, oil shale, Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, then, of course, natural gas. And then, of course, the Keystone Pipeline, which would give us such from Canada. So everybody agrees we have plenty here. So if we don't produce it here, what does that mean to the price? What does it mean to the supply? The supply will be artificially what? Reduced. And if you artificially reduce the supply, what will that naturally do to the price of a barrel of oil?
It will drive it up.
It will drive it up. Hence why we're paying $4 a gallon for gasoline when we can be paying $1.50 or $2.
But, Sean, what if that became disconnected? What if the supply and demand rules didn't apply to oil?
Well, I mean, it's just absurd thinking. You're saying that basic economic principles won't apply.
Yeah, for oil, I think that might be going the way of the dodo bird. I think that the supply and demand principles for that particular
commodity. I'll tell you what. I'll make
a
deal with you. Why don't we try this for 10 years? And here's a challenge that I have for you and all your liberal green energy and thus creating. More creating a better environment for our national security because we're not dependent on Mideastern oil, which, by the way, if things really blow up in the Middle East, we're going to pay a very dear price. We'll even be paying more per barrel per oil, and we won't have any alternatives because we won't be able to extract the oil here that quickly. So why don't we try what I'm saying for 10 years, and in the meantime, you and all your liberal friends go out there and you develop that new energy that is cheap, that will transform the world and absolutely eliminate the need for fossil fuel. Okay, I'll give you 10 years to do it. Good luck.
Sean, I think that that 10 years, we may be having a different conversation, primarily one where all of your friends have tapped all the resources, like your Shell person on Friday.
As he was pointing out to you and as others have pointed out, we have a 90 to 100-year supply of natural gas, oil, coal, and we're not even beginning to tap the oil shale, which we could microwave, liquefy, and extract from the Midwest.
Well, I think we are, actually.
You're wrong. There's nothing you can say to this because, listen, we have the ability to be energy independent. It's good for prices of oil, and it's good for national security. And I'm open to whatever new technology you and your crazy liberal bicycle riding, green energy come up with. I'm open to it.
As a matter of fact, if the Kennedys
put wind farms outside of their house, I'll put them outside of my house, but I won't do it until they do it. If the liberals give up their private jets, then I'll get a small car in exchange. How's that?
Not good enough, Sean. Did your buddy on Friday tell you where his barrel of oil from Houston goes whenever it's pumped out of the ground?
Well, we don't have enough. We haven't built a refinery in 35 years in this country. I would build a refinery as well.
Well, I would too. That would certainly help. Now we're on the same page. Now we might actually be getting somewhere because I feel like that barrel of oil heads right to a world marketplace, gets mismatched.
No, I'm saying that we ought to become energy independent first. Here's what I would do. If we're going to drill here in this country, I think the supply ought to be first going to the United States. Look, I would build refineries. I'd build nuclear power plants. France gets 75% of their power from nuclear. I would continue drilling, extracting. I would continue coal mining and expand it. And in the meantime, I would challenge every brilliant liberal in the world to come up with a new form of energy that is cleaner, that will save us money. And I'm putting out the challenge to all of you liberals. If you do so, you will become a billionaire. And with those billions, you can give all of your money to the poor all around the world. And you don't have to keep any of it for yourself. You can give it all away. So not only will you clean the environment, you're going to help the poor if you develop that clean energy that you keep talking about. Okay,
It may not even be a clean energy issue, Sean. It might be just having to suck up paying $4 a gallon for gas and using other people's resources and not our own. Because once the United States uses its oil, independent or not, it's gone. I would certainly rather sit on it, pay a little more this summer, and then look and see about it. Frankly, using somebody else's resources instead of our own.
All right, I tried. I gave it my best shot, Jason. Thank you, buddy. You tell all your liberal friends, start working there. Christian, West Palm Beach, Florida, on The Sean Hannity Show. What's up, Christian? How are you?
How you doing, Sean?
What's going on, my
first
friend?
First of all, I'd like to thank you for being a patriot and being one of the few voices that we have in the media of truth in this country.
Hey, thank you for giving me this voice. I'm trying. I'm working hard.
Well, you're doing a good job.
And you hear what I'm dealing with on the other end sometimes.
Well, you know, there's always going to be two sides to every story, as I like to look at it. But I'm actually calling today in regards to last Friday. I believe you were talking with Robin Leach about the conditions in this country, the economic conditions in this country, and how it directly correlates to liberal policies.
Yeah, we were. And, you know, what's interesting, when I listen to him or Daniel Hannan, who is a European member of parliament, or Stuart Varney, you know, they all have the same story to tell, and it's pretty fascinating because they've lived under the socialist utopia. They've heard the same arguments that are now being made about redistribution and,
right.
And you know, class envy and warfare, and that we now see the results. You know, if you look at what's happening in Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Ireland, and the demonization of Germany, and you look at the decline. All a result of the very policies now we are adopting. So I wouldn't expect any other result than what we see happening there. They're just a few years down the road from us.
Exactly. And, you know, my story, my family came from Cuba after the revolution, escaping
tyranny.
You know, potentially, yeah, exactly, escaping communism because the conditions were absolutely deplorable. And they came here to give me such an opportunity to, you know, go to school, to learn as much as I can, to become educated, and to work so hard for the American dream, as we like to call it. And what I noticed was, throughout my whole life, I've been almost indoctrinated into this liberal culture, as you would. You know, basically spitting on the Constitution in public school and promoting the ideas of Lenin and Marx. And it really is quite scary. You know, because it didn't stop in grade school. It continues on to get bigger in college. I mean, you probably, you know, are experiencing that too, people calling in,
sure.
Right?
Absolutely. Look, this is a battle between ideologies. This is what we call a choice election that's coming up here. We're either going to continue down this path, bigger government, less freedom, more control, and frankly, failed promises. Unfortunately, the promises, they're not exposed as failures until we reach that tipping point where an economic crisis is so bad that the government has no choice but to do what they ought to be doing now, what they ought to have done 10 years ago. And that is get a hold of entitlement spending and not overpromise people and give them a false sense of security. And by the way, it's all done in the name of their own power. You know, they feel
right.
The best way to get elected is to go out there, promise people things they're never going to be able to afford, and that'll keep them empowered throughout their entire working career. They'll leave. They'll get a big, fat pension. They'll walk away, and they'll say, I tried my best. This has all been tried before. There's nothing new here that they're implementing. This rhetoric that we hear out of Obama, this demonization of opponents, this class warfare, the division, none of this is new. It's all been tried before, and it has been successful. And then the net result has always been a path to bankruptcy. And that's
exactly.
What America, that's the path America's now on.
And what is sickening is they even use this rhetoric, this so-called liberalism, where it's not even liberalism. You know, classic liberalism promotes freedom, promotes free markets, you know, promotes the individual liberties that, you know, we see a lot, you know, going to the wayside nowadays. And in contrast to what they really are promoting, which is totalitarianism. You know, I know this firsthand. You know, I can hear stories from my family from Cuba of people still over there in a dugout hole with an iron grate over it because they disagreed with you know, Castro's policies. So, it really is scary.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate a good call. Thank you, Christian. And check in anytime you want. I'd love to hear you call back again. Back to our phones as we say hi to Tyler is in Bowling Green, Ohio. Hey, Tyler, how are you?
Hi, always good to talk to you. How are you doing?
I'm good, sir. What's up?
I just wanted to call in and have a discussion with you about, and I don't call it this. I don't like the rhetoric on either end of it, but just for discussion, for the, you know, the war on women and stuff. We heard a lot from you and the right about, you know, the Hillary Rosen thing, and we've heard a lot on the left towards Republicans, so both sides kind of looking at it towards each other to blame or whatever. And not to be partisan, but I think just trying to juxtapose this Hillary Rosen comment, even if what she said truly was deplorable, even if what she said, her ideology was wrong, her judgment was wrong, trying to juxtapose one Democratic strategist's comment as equal to dozens, hundreds, maybe even thousands of legislation from Republicans, from cities, states, national level, across the board, down the list, against women, I think that legislation overpowers any argument that the right, specifically you, that I've heard in the past few weeks.
What have I ever said on this program that is against women, ever?
No. I mean, your arguments that the left and Hillary Rosen specifically is targeted the war on women rather than Republican legislation.
Well, I'm only looking at, for example, the president taking $1 million from Bill Maher and lecturing us on tone, civility, the discourse in the country. I think that's hypocritical. He could have taken a stand. There was a moment there where he could have really led, and he blew it. I think Hillary Rosen's comments are more reflective of an extreme feminist agenda that, you know, they're so out of touch, they actually think that their radical views are mainstream, and they're not. You know, people actually respect work-at-home mothers, and, you know, they don't buy into the condescension which was implied here, nor the class warfare that's behind it. So I'm not really sure exactly what you mean there, but I'm just running out of time. Thank you for the call. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Let not your heart be troubled. Robin Leach, you don't want to miss this tonight. Very critical of Obama and socialism. He lived under it. Rudy Giuliani tonight endorses Romney. And Marco Rubio, his little flub, saying, oh, if I'm vice president, also Dick Morris. And the return of Beckel, 9 Eastern. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks for being with us.